Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. Like I told you last week, over the next several episodes, we'll be answering a lot of questions that have been emailed into me about Oswald's time at the Dallas Police Department before his death. Last week, we looked at whether the Dallas police was upset that the FBI didn't inform them of Lee Harvey Oswald being in Dallas. We also heard about a note that Oswald supposedly wrote to FBI agent James Hostie before the assassination, and how Hostie destroyed the note after Oswald was killed. We also heard evidence that J. Edgar Hoover was upset with the Dallas police over Oswald's death and how they handled his security. This week, the question shifts to Jack Ruby and his mysterious presence at the Dallas Police Department over that historic weekend. Our listener questions this week come from April in Provo, Utah. She asked, how many times was Jack Ruby seen at the Dallas Police Department over the weekend of the assassination? What was Ruby's real relationship with the Dallas police? And what do you think Jack Ruby's motives were to kill Oswald? We've seen Jack Ruby pop up all over this case so far. He's allegedly seen in Dealey Plaza, at Parkland Hospital, and at the Texas Theater on the day of the assassination. What about the Dallas Police Department? After Oswald had been captured, District Attorney Henry Wade held a press conference at the Dallas Police Station. A reporter asked Wade, "Does he appear sane to you?" Wayne answers, "Yes, he does." And then another reporter asks, "Is he a member of any communist front organization?" Wade answers, "That I can't say at the present time. He was a member of the Free Cuba movement or whatever." Jack Ruby can then be heard saying, "Fair play for Cuba, I believe it was."
"You're saying to you?"
"Yes, he does."
"Is he a member of any communist front organization?"
"That I can't say at the present time."
"Any organization that he belongs to that you know of?"
"Well, the only one I mentioned was the Free Cuba movement or whatever that."
Fair play for Cuba,
I believe was that.
What is more interesting than Ruby's knowledge of Fair Play for Cuba, after there had already been reports about it in the news, is Ruby's presence at the Dallas Police Department that day at all. Why does Jack Ruby keep showing up in all these important scenes? Actually, there are multiple sightings of Ruby at the police station during three different time periods on Friday, the day Kennedy and Tippit were killed. Early on Friday morning, Friday evening after Oswald had been captured, and late night on Friday for the press conference. Officer T.M. Hansen Jr. told the FBI in his December 1963 interview that he knew Ruby from visiting the Carousel Club and saw Ruby between 9 a.m. and 9:30 a.m. the morning of the assassination entering the City Hall building, which is where the Dallas Police Department is located. As he walked by Ruby, Officer Hansen shook his hand and said good morning, but did not engage in conversation with him. But then 7 months later, Officer Hansen changed his tune and told the Warren Commission that, quote, he was not positive whether he remembered seeing Ruby on the morning of Friday the 22nd or Thursday the 21st. He could not remember. If Hansen was originally telling the truth and his memory is correct, it's a pretty weird coincidence that Ruby was at the police department on the morning of the assassination. Dallas reporter Victor Robertson Jr. told the Warren Commission that he had known Ruby for approximately 2 years as the operator of the Carousel Club. He recalled seeing Ruby in the third floor hallway of the police building sometime between 5 and 7 p.m. on Friday. He saw Ruby try to enter the door of the room where Oswald was being held, and two police officers pulled Ruby back and did not allow him to enter the room. In that same time frame, Dallas reporter Ronald Jenkins also saw Ruby on the third floor and said that he was, quote, milling around in the crowd of press representatives and was alone, end quote. Detective Eberhardt, who had known Ruby for 6 years, saw him on the third floor of the police building around 6 or 7 p.m. that night. He said Ruby, quote, brought some sandwiches over and was acting as an interpreter for some Israeli reporters. Ruby was carrying a notebook, end quote. Detective Standifer, who had known Ruby for 13 years, also saw Ruby on the third floor that Friday night around the same time. The Warren report dismisses the idea that Ruby was at the police department before the late night press conference, saying, quote, at least 5 witnesses recall seeing a man they believe is Ruby. However, it is not clear that Ruby was present at the building before 11 p.m., end quote. The Warren report does not explain why it discounts the testimony of these five witnesses, but it does. If you notice, the Warren report honestly dismisses all testimony that doesn't toe the line of the official narrative. At this point, the record is clear that Ruby was at the police department at least for the late night press conference, and according to the weight of the evidence, earlier in the evening, when he attempted to enter the area where Oswald was being held on the third floor. What we don't know is why Ruby was at the police department at any of these times, on Friday in the first place. G. Robert Blake, who was the chief counsel and staff director for the U.S. House Select Committee on Assassinations that reinvestigated Kennedy's assassination. He would have this to say about Jack Ruby's presence at the Dallas Police Department that weekend. Blakely was asked by ABC News, "How central is Jack Ruby's murder of Oswald to your understanding of this case?" Blakely answered, quote, "To understand who killed President Kennedy, I think you have to understand what happened to the accused assassin of President Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald. I see Jack Ruby's assassination of Lee Harvey Oswald as a mob hit. This is in direct contradiction to the Warren Commission. The Warren Commission portrayed Jack Ruby as a wild card who got into position to kill Oswald just by sheer luck. I think, in fact, he stalked him. I can show you from the Warren Commission's evidence that he tried to get into where he was being interrogated, number one, that he tried to get in where he was going to be in a lineup, number two, that he was seen around the garage where he was announced that he was going to be moved. And we know from Jack Ruby's testimony himself, he had a gun with him the entire weekend he was stalking Oswald." Blakely goes on to say, "I believe that Jack Ruby was able to get in to kill Oswald through the corrupt cooperation of the Dallas Police Department, that he was let in through a back door and was given an opportunity to kill Oswald. I see that, therefore, as a mob hit. And if that's a mob hit, there is only one reason for it, and that is to cover up the assassination of the president himself." End quote. Now to April's second question. What was Ruby's relationship with the Dallas police? The fact that Jack Ruby was close to the Dallas Police Department isn't disputed at all. The question is, just how close are we talking? Did he happen to casually know a few cops? Or was there some deeper connection between Ruby and the Dallas police? The Warren report denies that there was any complicity between Ruby and the Dallas police to allow him to enter the building to shoot Oswald that Sunday morning. Regarding Ruby's relationship with police officers, the Warren report says, quote, "Ruby was known to have a wide acquaintanceship with Dallas policemen and to seek their favor. According to testimony from many sources, he gave free coffee at his clubs to many policemen while they were on duty, and free admittance and discounts on beverages when they were off duty." Although Chief Curry's estimate that approximately 25 to 50 of the 1,175 men in the Dallas police knew Jack Ruby may be too conservative, the commission found no evidence of any suspicious relationships between Ruby and any police officer, end quote. The thing that jumps out to me from the Warren report is that the commission thought that it was conservative to say Ruby only knew 25 to 50 cops. Think about this for a second. How many cops does the average person know? But maybe the question here is, how many cops does the average strip club owner know? One fact that sheds light on that question is that of the 75 cops who were present when Oswald was killed, at least 40 of them knew Ruby. But Chief Curry writes that off as no big deal.
"A great deal has been written about the relationship of the Dallas Police Department with Jack Ruby. We have 1,200 men in our department, and we had each man to submit a report regarding his knowledge or acquaintance with Jack Ruby. Less than 50 men even knew Jack Ruby."
Is there a reason to believe that Ruby's relationship with the Dallas Police Department allowed him to have access to Oswald? He literally had access to Oswald an entire weekend in Dallas as he slithered his way through the halls of the Dallas Police Department.
"We're at the Lewiston Raceway in Lewiston, Maine, with Mrs. Nancy Hamilton, owner of the Hamilton Stables. Mrs. Hamilton, did you testify as a witness before the Warren Commission?"
"Yes, I did. On June 2nd, 1964, we have been a freelance investigator for various police departments, district attorney's offices, such as the Sacramento District Attorney's Office, Suffolk County, Massachusetts District Attorney's Office, Boston Police Department, and various private detectives."
"And before that, were you employed by Jack Ruby?"
"Yes, I was. This was in 1961. In Dallas at his club, The Carousel, and I was bartender, waitress, and rather the manager there."
"How did you get that job?"
I had gone into Dallas not knowing anyone, and of course the first place I went was the police department. And they were very kind and got me the job there.
They got you the job by Jack Ruby?
Yes, they did.
Did they know Ruby?
Personally, oh yes, very well. Vouched for him, wonderful person, great man. Well known by the Dallas Police Department.
What were your duties there?
Well, general bar duties such as setting up the liquor, getting the bar ready for the evening trade, waiting tables if he was short-handed. Otherwise, I'd be behind the bar serving the drinks.
Did you ever serve drinks to Dallas police officers?
Oh, yes. In fact, the Dallas police officers were the special boys, shall we say. We even had private stock for them.
Private stock?
Oh, yes. They wouldn't, bar liquor wasn't for them. We had names such as Hague and Hague or Black Label. The very, very high-priced drinks on the house, of course, you never... And that was a gross... oversight if you ever charge a Dallas police officer or any official of the city of Dallas or Tarrant County.
Well, other than the Dallas police officers, what officials did frequent the Ruby's establishment?
Oh, such as your district attorney, which would be Mr. Wade.
Did you know Ruby before this?
No, sir. Did you receive any specific instructions from Jack Ruby about serving drinks for the Dallas police officers?
Yes, in fact, Jack told me point blank. He said, Nancy, if you ever, he said, intentionally or unintentionally, charge a Dallas police officer, he said, you might as well go look for another job. He said, don't offend them, cater to them, talk with them, even if you ignore the other customers, bend over backwards to be nice to them.
Did Ruby perform any other favors for the Dallas police officers?
Well, yeah, well, favors... Call them favors, I suppose so. He provided girls, gambling, and booze.
How many Dallas police officers would you estimate Jack Ruby knew on a personal basis?
At least half and probably two-thirds.
There were almost 1,200 police officers in Dallas in 1963. Would you say Ruby knew 600 of them?
Oh, easily.
A great deal has been written about the relationship of the Dallas Police Department with Jack Ruby. We have 1,200 men in our department, and we had each man to submit a report regarding his knowledge or acquaintance with Jack Ruby. Less than 50 men even knew Jack Ruby.
You see, Jack Ruby was a man who wanted to be noticed, wanted to be known. And he used to frequent the Dallas Police Department. And he used to brag, I can get this fixed for you, or I can get that fixed for you.
Did the Dallas Police Department or District Attorney's Office ever do any favors for Jack Ruby?
Several that I could probably name, such as serving drinks a little late.
I mean, Ruby was permitted to serve drinks after hours.
They did, and no one ever interfered. And, of course, it was common knowledge that he ran girls and gambling, and I've never seen him any kind of pickup on it.
Did you serve mixed drinks to police officers?
Yes.
Is it against the law in Dallas to serve mixed drinks?
Oh, yes, definitely, except in a private club.
This, of course, was not a private club.
No, open club.
So that every time you served a drink to a police officer, it was a violation of the law?
Yes, not sad, but I broke the law a few hundred times in doing so.
And of course, the police were witnesses.
Well, up to a point, they were witnesses. After that, I guess they probably didn't care.
Whether Jack Ruby knew 600 cops or only 50, either way, he knew a lot more than the average person. And while we know that Ruby had these relationships with the police, we don't know for sure whether Ruby used those relationships to gain access to kill Oswald. If he did, that evidence is not in the record and may be the secrets that he took to his grave. Most Warren Report defenders believe that Ruby killed Oswald, quote, to spare the president's widow the ordeal of having to testify at Oswald's trial, end quote. Some people argue that Ruby had an additional motive of being an admirer of President Kennedy and wanting to avenge the death of his favorite president. One of Ruby's lawyers, Melvin Belli, has stated point blank that neither of those motives were Ruby's true motive. If that's the case, then what was? When Jack Ruby went to trial for the murder of Oswald, his defense was that he had psychomotor epilepsy and that the gun was fired unintentionally because Ruby did not have control of his actions. So when given the opportunity to go on the record as having killed Oswald to help Jackie Kennedy or to avenge President Kennedy's death, Ruby instead took the position that his shooting of Oswald was completely unintentional. So that blows the Warren Report defenders' theories out of the water. So to answer April's question as to my opinion why Ruby killed Oswald, I believe he killed him because he had no choice. When something went wrong with the meeting at the Texas Theater and Oswald wasn't killed, he was fingered by his next level superiors to finish the job in the Dallas Police Department basement. Here are a couple reasons why I believe Ruby's killing of Oswald was not a spontaneous act like the Warren Report says it was. First, we have the potential foreknowledge of Oswald's murder by George Senator, who lived with Ruby. According to reporter Seth Canner, Ruby's roommate, George Senator, called Dallas attorney Jim Martin from a payphone near the Eatwell Cafe and asked Martin to represent his friend Jack Ruby for murdering Lee Harvey Oswald. Senator placed this call minutes before the news came over the radio that Oswald had been shot, making it appear as though Senator had foreknowledge of the event. Next, there's Detective Don Archer's description of Ruby's behavior upon hearing that Oswald was dead. Detective Archer was one of the first people who saw Ruby immediately after he shot Oswald. Listen to Detective Archer's description of Ruby after he shot Oswald.
Behavior to begin with, he was very hyper. He was sweating profusely. I could see his heart. Of course, we had stripped him down for security purposes. He asked me for one of my cigarettes, so I gave him a cigarette. Finally, after about 2 hours had elapsed, which put it around 1 p.m., the head of the Secret Service came up, and I conferred with him, and he told me that Oswald had, in effect, died, and it should shock him because it will mean the death penalty. So I returned, I said, Jack, it looks like it's going to be the electric chair for you. Instead of being shot, he became calm. He quit sweating. His heart slowed down. I asked him if he wanted a cigarette, and he advised me he didn't smoke. And I was just astonished that this was a complete difference in behavior of what I've expected. I would say that his life had depended on him getting Oswald.
He made the statement, we are going to kill him. Which leads me to believe that this was not a spontaneous thing that happened on the spur of the moment. He was watching Oswald coming out the door, and all of a sudden he decided to shoot him. I do not believe that. I think this was a planned event with him being the man to do the shooting.
For conspiracy theorists, hearing that Ruby looked relieved at finding out that Oswald died is more fact to confirm that Ruby was killing Oswald on behalf of someone else, presumably someone whom Ruby feared. In just the first few years after the Warren Report fairy tale was issued, independent investigators easily found people that connected Jack Ruby to gunrunning in Cuba, close contact with Dallas Mafia Don Joe Salvello, and his Chicago mob ties. Let's look at it. Ruby stalked Oswald that weekend. We have photos of him in Dealey Plaza, at Parkland Hospital after the shooting, at the Dallas Police Department Friday night correcting the cops on the Fair Play for Cuba committee, which showed he had insider knowledge about Oswald. Like I stated earlier, after the Oswald shooting, Ruby was extremely agitated, asking if Oswald was still alive. When he found out that Oswald was dead and that he was likely facing the electric chair, Ruby immediately relaxed and appeared relieved. Perhaps some of the strongest evidence that cannot be denied or explained away by coincidence theorists is a video recording of Ruby being interviewed by Earl Warren and Gerald Ford at a break in Ruby's trial. Ruby is seen begging Warren to take him to Washington, D.C., where he could tell the whole story of his involvement. He claimed that he could not speak freely in Dallas without the fear of being killed.
People have so much to gain and have such a material motive for putting me in a position I'm in. We'll never let the true facts come of our voice to the world.
Part of that interview is really hard to understand, so here's what Ruby says. Ruby states, quote, "Everything pertaining to what's happening has never come to the surface. The world will never know the true facts of what occurred and my motives. The people who had so much to gain and had such an ulterior motive for putting me in the position I'm in will never let the true facts come above board to the world." A reporter then asked, "Are these people in very high positions, Jack?" And Ruby responds, "Yes," end quote. Dorothy Kilgallen, the famous columnist who interviewed Ruby in a rare prison interview, said that she had information that was going to blow the whole case wide open. She had a notebook full of details. Shortly after that statement, she was found dead of a, quote, apparent suicide. Just but one in a string of suspiciously time-convenient deaths in the case within a few years after the assassination. You can go back and listen to Dorothy Kilgallen's entire story on episode 34, entitled The Reporter Who Knew Too Much. April, I hope we answered all your questions. Next week, we're going to answer some questions from a listener who asked about Ruby's activities the morning before he killed Oswald. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. Also this week, I'd like to announce that I'll be speaking at the Citizens Against Political Assassinations, or otherwise known as CAPA, conference in Dallas in November. If you'd like to get a signed copy of my book or just meet and talk about the case, I'd love to see you there in November. The conference runs from Friday, November 22nd to Sunday, November 24th. I will be speaking about my book, The End of Innocence, and also I'll be speaking about the presence of professional assassins in Dealey Plaza the day President Kennedy was killed. I'll also be speaking about a second arrest in the Texas Theater that day. You could get tickets for the conference at www.capa-us.org. Hope to see you there.